Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
We're all like guns, and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 152. I'm one of your hosts, Mike, and with me tonight I have Thomas.
Hello.
Benny.
Heyo.
And Sarah is back again.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
Who wants to start with what we did in guns this week? Thomas?
I'm still looking for my show notes. Hang on here.
Okay. Benny, how about you?
So it's the high holiday season, so no gun stuff. I'm too busy at work, and even I had my dad message me today. He's like, oh, do you want to head to the range someday this week, like one morning this week? And I'm like, I can't do it. Too much work, so yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to assume Thomas is still looking for his show notes, so Sarah and I do almost the exact same thing, so they're kind of intertwined. So remember that 1,000 rounds of, or 1,000 primers that I had from Federal that were duds before?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, out of desperation for primers, I decided to try and load them up anyways and see how they would run. See if maybe it was just a bad, 500 before. Because this is a fresh box. It's the same lot number, but it's a fresh box, never been cracked. So I'd hoped that maybe the other lot, maybe it wasn't bad so much as it got left in the rain or something. I don't know. So I loaded up 100 of them, took them to the range, and surprise, surprise, they're still bad. So, yeah. Only about one out of every six went off, so that's a no-go for that. But I figured that out when we took a coworker upstairs to the range.
Yeah, I was speaking with one of the guys at work, and we were talking about what we did on the weekend, and I mentioned I had gone to an IDPA match, and everyone at work knows that I like shoot competitively, so he was asking me all these questions, and he's like, oh, is that with handguns? What do you do? All this stuff. And then he's like, oh, I'd really like to try that one day. That sounds like a lot of fun. So I told Mike that, and Mike told me to let him know that, well, we had to go to the range this Wednesday for club meeting and practice. So
have to go.
Yeah. Asked him if he wanted to come. So when I asked him the next day at work, his eyes like lit up like it was Christmas. So he was so excited. So for the next couple days, all we talked about was what we're going to do at the range and what kind of things he wanted to try and such. And
yeah,
took him out shooting and he had a good time.
Yeah, we brought out the whole, well, not the whole allotment, but most of the handguns, because that's really what he was interested in, and got him shooting with that. And he was really good. He's a hunter, so he's been around firearms, I'm assuming, his whole life.
Yeah, his whole family hunts.
Yeah, so he was very good. Like, he knew, like, right off the bat, finger off the trigger. He knew, he should check the gun to make sure it was empty before he put it down. He just didn't know how to, because it was a handgun, never used one before. So we just went through all that stuff, how the safeties work, things like that. And we shot all the guns, and he's a good shot. Like I said, he's a hunter. This isn't new to him, but we were only shooting 5-7 yards away, but he was doing really good. A lot better than some of the other new shooters I've taken out.
Yeah, and he's a hunter, but he definitely has an interest in firearms in general, because he was talking about how he built his own hunting rifle, and he had done all this work to it, and he was really keen on getting it resighted in and getting a few rounds through it to settle the barrel into the stock, I believe.
I don't know.
Well, he was talking about how he had to put so many rounds through it to settle everything in, because he had rebuilt this hunting rifle. So he's knowledgeable of firearms in general as well. He's just, handguns were a whole new world to him that he really wanted to try, but he just didn't know anyone who had any.
Yeah.
So you made a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was super excited, and he even said, if you guys are going to a match close by, to let him know so he could come out and watch and actually see us do it live. Unfortunately, it's kind of that time of the year where most of our action shooting is wrapping up, so there's really no close-by matches for him to come check out. But hopefully next year in the spring, he'll have the opportunity to come out and see us shoot a match.
Yeah, he said he wants to get his restricted. Like, he's done the non-restricted and the hunting course. He's like, oh, I think I'm going to have to get my restricted now. This is way too addicting, way too much fun. So, yeah.
Well, this is the time to get it, right? You get it now, and then by the time spring rolls around, He can come check out a match, maybe try a few other handguns, decide what he likes, and he'll already have his license pretty much ready to rock and roll for the shooting season, per se.
Yeah, so I told him we'd find him a course, a nice restricted course for him, because he didn't know if there was any going on in the area, so I told him for sure there would be, not to worry, and we'd find him a good one.
Yeah, there'll be something he can go to.
Yeah. So one of the things we had done is, with that Q5 that I bought, one of the big reasons why I wanted it was so I could put a red dot on it. And the big reason was for taking new people out shooting, you know. Now, he was good with the open sights. He understood the concept, like, right off the bat. As soon as I mentioned it, he knew what I was talking about. But I bought it so that, you know, you take a new person out shooting, and instead of them trying to worry about front and rear sight, you know, just put the red dot on the target and go. So I showed him the gun. He's like, oh, cool. And I said, yeah, I've never even shot it with the red dot. And he said, well, you go ahead. You shoot it first then. So I take my first shot. I'm like, okay, good. I take the second shot, and I get hit in the face. And I'm thinking, wow, it's been forever since I've hit myself in the face with brass. Like, that tend to happen when you're limp wristing. And I look at the gun, I realize there's no red dot on my gun anymore.
How did you secure it?
Well, it's held on by, like, a plate with two screws. And I didn't Loctite it, because I was like, I'm just going to shoot it this one time. And then after this, I'm going to take it back off, because I can't have the red dot on there for shooting IDPA. So I never borrowed a Loctite it, but I paid by getting slapped in the face by a red dot.
any damage to the threads?
Doesn't look like it.
Okay, good.
It only lasted two shots?
Yeah, so I'm thinking I must not have mounted it on properly.
Yeah, you kind of did it in a rush the night before, so
yeah.
I don't think you did it.
I must have missed a step in there somewhere. Yeah, it was kind of a rush job. I just wanted to get it on there so that we'd have one more option for him to try.
Yeah, because it doesn't make sense. Two shots and the whole thing comes. Like, I don't care how much recoil. It's only in two directions. Your screw shouldn't come out.
Yeah, so either way, I lost one of the screws. Luckily, Vortex is smart and they send you with three screws, even though you only need two, because they figure you're going to be an idiot like me and lose one.
Well, they knew who was buying it.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I didn't strip it by screwing it on too tight. Not this time. But I just went on Amazon quickly. I'm like, at first I was searching to see, what like thread pitch it is and everything like that, so I could buy new screws. When I searched it, Amazon comes up for less than $8. I can buy 100 screws. So after I buy that, if anyone else does the same thing I do and you need a replacement screw, I might have a few. And then outside of that, we shot our I-Corps match today, but we can kind of talk about that later.
Yep.
I-Corps is our main topic.
Yay!
Until then, Thomas, what did you get up to this week?
Well, I was on vacation, but I did get a chance to listen to last week's show. The whole show.
Oh, no.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, it wasn't just us. George was there, too.
Well, just to correct a couple of things. First of all, tape works great, Wanda. It sounds like she had a really good instructor. And I don't own any muzzleloaders, guys. George is the old guy. He owns an 1873. The oldest I own is a 1910. And looking down the barrel, sometimes it's a good thing. You have to look down the bore after you've done the action proofs. And every new shooter should have a bore light to check the bore for damage, lead fouling, or copper buildup while cleaning. And you guys didn't know what a 22 Magnum was?
No, we didn't know what the what the abbreviation stood for.
Yeah,
we knew it was Magnum.
It just had 22 WMR.
And Benny, getting your flash suppressor full of mud and blowing it out by shooting it? Come on, we're going to teach new shooters how to blow up their guns?
No, that's legitimately what they're supposed to do.
You guys are in trouble. This is a golden gun.
Oh, man.
It's almost like our parent has returned.
It's funny, though, because I was listening to the show and I was like, that's not right. And I don't remember what it was, but I remember I had to make some correction. So, I'm sorry, listeners. I messed up last week. I forgot what it was.
You guys, it's a 22.
Haven't done anything bad last week.
Pick something. 1960. You're unsure.
1960.
About.
Winchester introduced the Winchester Magnum rifle, the WMR, right? But before that, it was the WRF from 1890 until 1960. So it's like a shorter case in the WRF. You can shoot WRF through WRM, but not vice versa. But the magazines, you can do it single shot. the magazine's a little bit short for those rounds, but they're still available. So there's actually two 22 Magnums. There's the original one, which is the WRF, and then the Winchester Magnum rifle. But, you know, before your time, so 1960, that's when I was born, guys. So.
maybe a little bit before us.
What else? So I went to Long's and I dropped off my BL-22. And he was not encouraging. He looked at it and I said, what's wrong with it? I said, nothing. I said, just want a trigger job. And he just looked at it. He goes, not a lot I can do for that thing. So he can probably get it down to about 4 pounds. I don't think he can get much further, depending on how much work he does. He estimates an hour to 2 hour shop time to do it, depending on how light I want it. And then Keith and Monica actually quit the Northumberland Pistol Revolver Club. I was surprised. They've been there for years and years. And they joined the Lower Trent Valley Club. So things must have been pretty bad at that Northumberland for the Longs to quit. They're good people. It's their loss. And you guys ever been to Long's Gunsmith Shop?
No.
Nope.
It's a combination store. It's Monica's Gifts and then Keith Long's Guns. When you walk in it, it's a girly gift shop. All around, all trinkets thing, and his lovely wife Monica runs that. Then you walk through her store and you get to the gun shop. And all the gun shipping tools and all the crap and all the guns up on the wall. So it's great. You can bring the wife shopping, and if she's not into shooting, she can shop while you shop. It's kind of a unique little setup.
What was the name of this?
It's a combination. It's Long's Guns and Monica's Gifts. It's up in Boodley. It's at the bottom of Rice Lake.
Oh, beautiful, beautifully.
Yeah, it's you know, they're really, really nice people. You know, it's funny, I asked him, I said, so what's been keeping you busy lately? Like, I fear if there was a new gun out that was having a lot of problems, you might have said the Remington or something else. So I said, you know, what's been keeping you busy? He just looked me straight in the eye and he says, people's stupidity. He goes, that's what's been keeping me busy, is people being stupid. And he's got a BLR on the bench, and I guess somebody decided to do a trigger job on the thing, and you've got a rack and pinion system, so you have to know what you're doing with those gears. And I guess the guy screwed it up, so he was all frustrated trying to fix that up. So, and he had some interesting stuff. I almost bought, he had an old Savage gallery gun, so it's a copy of the Winchester pump. I'm guessing it was 1930s, but it was in fair shape, but looks like the magazine tube had some damage, and somebody re-repaired it. I didn't like the look of it, but he only wanted $200 for it, so he did a few interesting things. And then I turned around and I went back to the cottage and I stayed on vacation and wasn't allowed to look at guns. I wasn't allowed to play with my cell phone. I had to have fun. No shooting this year on holidays.
Well, not everyone gets to go shooting when they go on holidays.
Oh, I have been for the last 14 years. That's why I'm kind of ticked that I lost what I had. But I'm telling you, if you're going goose hunting, there's a heck of a lot of them up in Rice Lake right now. When that season opens up, there's going to be a lot of geese coming down. There was thousands of them on the lake. Thousands of them.
Wow.
I did do a lot of shooting. I brought my camera. So I did shoot, just not with a firearm. And it was funny. We were doing some photography on the shoreline, and I passed these two bushes. And I guess there was, what do you call it? A flock of monarch butterflies? What do you call them? There's a whole migrating path of monarchs. And all day they're coming in and out. The bushes are just covered up with them. So I guess really good shots there. And then we did some astronomy photography, which I'd never done. We did some photography at night, and that came out pretty cool. So Bruce has been teaching me some neat things with my digital camera since I'm old, and I don't know how to use the technology that well.
That's cool.
That's it. That's it for me and guns.
That's it. All right. All right. Well, we'll move on to guns in the news. And story one is actually an interview that Thomas did with Dean from Select Shooting Supplies, talking about the recent, what was it, the shooting day? What am I?
The range day, Select Shooting Supplies range day.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is their second annual event where they basically have a lot of different vendors coming out. There's no licensing required, just a small fee for your ammo purchase. And they basically introduce new shooters as well as the, you know, everyday shooters like us to new products. And it's a fun time to get out. So,
yep. And if you don't remember any of this stuff, well, then go back a couple episodes where we interviewed him.
Yeah.
Here's the interview right here with Thomas and Dean.
Hey, Dean.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Not too bad.
I just wanted to basically know how attendance-wise, because I know last year you had about 400 people, Dean?
And
about 10,000 rounds of ammo?
Yeah, last year we went through 10,000 rounds. We estimated about 400 people. It's always hard with the people count. We kind of do that by dividing the number of rounds fired by the average number of tickets purchased. So calculated out the ammo today, we put 26,150 rounds downrange this year. And It felt like we had more, but doing the math on that, it comes out at about 650 people in attendance.
That's still quite an increase from last year.
Oh, yeah. The first 2 hours of the day, with it being a stinking hot day here in Ontario yesterday, we were hitting 30 before the humidex factor. So we opened at 10 and right through till about 12:30, quarter to 1, there was about a 200-yard lineup to get onto the range to shoot. By 1 o'clock, that had died down and just stayed steady with, you know, two or three people deep waiting to shoot for the rest of the day. I think it just got too hot for people in the afternoon.
Excellent, excellent. And was the store open at the same time?
Yeah, the store was open. We had a lot of traffic, people that came over to the event and then went over to the store. CGN user RL1 was out. He did some great photography at the event, posted that on Gun Nuts, but he also went over to the store and did a bunch over there as well. So if you haven't checked out the thread that he posted in our forum on Gun Nuts, it'd be worth checking out. He's got about 101 photos there. Once again this year, we had a lot of new shooters and a lot of young shooters. It was really cool to see. I don't know what age she was, but there was a young girl there, I'm going to say maybe 7, maybe 8 years old, fired an AR for the first time, turned around to her father and said, "I want more." and so she did. She got another ticket and shot it again. So it was cool to see the young kids out. We had quite a few of them this year. It went really well.
Yeah, last year you had a lot of families, young kids. I was quite surprised. A mix of a lot of new shooters, but I was surprised at the young people and young kids and the amount of girls that were actually shooting last year. So it's good to see it's continuing.
Yeah, exactly the same this year. I can't say that it felt like there was more, but there was equally as many as last year, and probably a few more just in the increase in numbers. We had a couple of extra attractions this year. We had the Canadian Historical Arms Museum were out there. They had 24 feet of tent space full of, beautifully restored historical arms from, light to full machine guns. We even had a PTRS 41 sitting in the back there that one of our customers propped off for us to put on display. So that drew a lot of attention. Of course, we cooked up, I think, 250 lunches that we sold for the Cambridge Self-Help Food Bank. So that was a success as well. And there was a few of the firearms internet celebrities were out and doing interviews and going along the line as well. So,
I'm sorry I missed it. I was threatened with death if I podcasted or did anything else when I was on my holidays because we left for vacation that day. So she's very happy. She had a great vacation, so hopefully I can get away with a little bit more. What would you say was the most popular firearm at the event? Like, what drew most people?
It was probably split between two. I would say three actually. On the handgun end, it's going to be the SIG MPX and the Scorpion, CZ Scorpion Evo. At the rifle end, the BCL 102, we put over 1,000 rounds downrange on the 102, and of that 26,000 plus rounds shot, 3,000 rounds were 308.
Well, let's just hope these type of events encourage a lot more people to get out there and get the firearms license and take the family out and get active in the shooting community, because I think it's a great event.
Yeah, and that's our goal. We were interviewed on one of the other channels there yesterday, and that was their question, what motivates us to do this? And it's to get people introduced to the shooting sports, and for those that are already in the shooting sports, get them introduced to new firearms, different disciplines, and, how often do you get to try a gun before you buy it?
Never.
Yeah.
And so, unless you belong to Sea Target Sports or something, or a range that a club that has a rental program, it's very seldom that happens in Canada.
Right. So that's our motivation. That's why we do it.
Awesome. Well, let's hope to next year's event. When's your next event anyway? You got anything else planned up your sleeve?
We had 50 people volunteering to help us with this yesterday, and it took all 50 of them absolutely working their backsides off to keep the event running. With that plus the 10 vendors, it's tough to pull that together on a regular basis. But we put this out as our second annual one. We truly hope we have a third annual one. That said, we're going to have to rethink the logistics a little bit, because the crowd we had this year was probably about the limit for the way we had it set up, And if it grows at this current rate, we're just going to have to rethink a little bit how we do it. But we've got some ideas on that, and I'm pretty sure next September we'll be talking again and doing another one.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Gene. Have yourself a great weekend, and thanks for dropping by.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
Take care.
All right. Good interview, Thomas.
Thank you.
Great job.
Thank you, Dean, for coming on and talking with us. So story number two, Thomas, CCFR podcast.
That's all I heard. CCFR has a podcast and Rod's the host. I just saw it when I was turning my phone today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because they're looking for a new host, Thomas.
No, they're
like,
not.
Yeah, they are. Rod doesn't want to do it. It's like what he says every single time. He's like, I don't want to do this job anymore. I would do it, but then that would make me the lead host every week, and that's just not a good thing for people. So,
yeah. I can think of some good people that would be excellent spokespersons, but
no, it's like they need someone to actually like run the podcast. So,
oh hell no, we're too one show a week's enough for anybody.
Yeah, one show every 3 weeks is enough for anybody.
Well, look at Trevor when he started Action Shooting Radio. It got to a point where he was gonna just dump off Facebook altogether, and he was gonna stop everything altogether. It just got too much.
Yeah,
so, you know, you can do too much. You really can. Like, it's great being dedicated to all our organizations and having shows and stuff, but don't burn yourself out.
So, Benny, why don't you tell us story number three?
Story number three, my neck of the woods. Toronto Fire Services Captain, who works out of Scarborough, is under investigation by Toronto's Organized Crime Unit and is facing several gun-related charges. Captain Carl Wing Lai, 46, was arrested after police executed search warrants last Thursday at two separate GTA locations and allegedly found more than 30 weapons, source told City News. He faces charges of careless storage of a firearm, importing and exporting knowing it is unauthorized, weapons dangerous, and possession of a firearm knowing it's unauthorized. He had bail hearing at Finch Avenue East Courthouse Tuesday and was released under strict conditions. He is not allowed to enter any fire hall in the city for 2 weeks or access any Toronto Fire Service computers because the police are still executing search warrants and looking for more evidence. Furthermore, he must live with a certi at his Richmond Hill home and stay in his house 24 hours a day unless he's with his certi. I guess that's supposed to say something else. Or going to court appearance or work. Bly, a fire prevention captain who works with children to promote fire safety, is on the sunshine list and makes $122,000 a year. He's been employed by the City of Toronto for 20 years and has never worked as a firefighter. He's now on leave. A spokesperson said the city is taking the charge seriously and cooperating with investigators. Ouch.
I wonder how he got that many guns.
Well, it seems like he imported them illegally.
Something. Yeah. I don't see anywhere where he got a charge against him for not having a firearm license.
No, it sounds like he probably has a license and got a bunch of guns and may or may not have skirted the law in doing so.
Yeah.
But it's like he's going to, like, what does he do for a living?
It looks like he's a fire prevention captain who works with children to promote fire safety.
And he's making how much a year?
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's ridiculous.
That's because you were
like, I know,
like, the city.
Well, most cops I know in Toronto that make the sunshine list, from what I understand, is because they're not actually running like patrols or anything. They get contracted out pretty much to construction companies, and then they use them to do like traffic control and whatever.
Yeah, you can overtime, make a lot working OT,
yeah,
doing stuff
it's
like
all
that.
Overtime stuff. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, how does a fire, like, what does he go to a school once a week and talk to people? How is he making that much, like, wow.
Well, a fire captain makes that kind of money.
Mm-hmm. Makes you feel like you really picked the wrong career, eh?
Yeah.
Like, if you're a captain of fire hall, that would be your pay scale if you ran a fire hall.
Oh, okay.
So if he's a captain rating, that's a captain's pay in the Toronto Firefighters. And he should know better.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. What's it called? Exporting knowing it is unauthorized. Importing and exporting knowing it is unauthorized.
Yeah. But it sounds to me, based on the charges, that they're not assuming that he had any ill intent, like he wasn't trafficking.
Well, he wasn't trafficking to prohibited persons.
Yeah.
I'm sure they are actually cutting him a break on a couple of different levels because of his position with the fire department.
Yeah.
The Toronto police have a very a good relationship with the fire department.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. All right, so this week's main topic is I-Corps. So, as many people have probably heard me yapper on about my adventures into I-Corps, so we figured we'd do a main topic so that people can understand the rules, equipment, and Sarah just shot her first I-Corps match, so we got her here to get her first-hand experience.
So what does I-Corps mean?
I-Corps stands for International Confederation of Revolver Enthusiasts.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's one of those things where they knew what the acronym they wanted was. So they're like, okay, let's figure out a set of words that will get us to that.
Yeah, that sounds pretty close.
Yeah. So I-Corps is dedicated to wheel gunners from every walk of life and for every purpose, from collectibles to competition. So this is, we're just kind of perusing through the rule book here. And like most safety, or pretty much the same safety rules as any other match, right? The 180 rule. Don't point at yourself. Don't point at other people.
Yeah.
You know, only take your gun out when you're instructed to.
What about, like, gear, not requirements, the opposite?
So the gear. So all firearms used in I-Corps matches must be revolvers. Obviously, it's for revolvers. With 32 Magnum caliber or greater.
So no 22s.
No 22. Actually, there is a 22 division, which is meant for juniors.
Yeah.
But I guess in the big boy divisions, you need to have a bit slightly larger. But, I mean, that includes all your, like, your 9mm. So one of the popular ones we'll talk about is the Jerry Mitchell-like 9mm 8-shot revolver.
Do people shoot 8 shots today?
Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense. I just thought I wasn't paying close enough attention to the pattern.
Yeah.
Was there someone in our group doing it?
Yeah, there was.
Oh. Yes, I saw his gun.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, for those who know power factors, what's nice about I-Corps is there's just one power factor for everything, and it's 120. And actually, one thing that I thought was interesting is in I-Corps, the rules on what you'd call making chrono, which is you have to get that power factor of 120, you give them six rounds, and they shoot all six through your gun. And as long as one makes 120, then technically your gun passes.
Oh.
That sounds very weird.
Yeah.
It's like, we really want you to make power factor, and we know it's hard. So, like, just come on, just one.
But it's not that hard to make power factor.
Well, except none of your no factory ammo will make it, you said, for a 38.
My 38 special, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But factory 9mm will make it.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
But yeah, that's just something interesting for those who shoot competition and have to deal with all this.
Couldn't you just have one? Like, I feel like there's some gaming going on over here.
Oh, yeah. Like, put it this way. My loads, when I reload them, the average power factor is 121. So that means that there's probably a couple rounds that fall below that 120. But as long as one of my six make it over 120, then I'm okay.
Uh-huh.
So, like you were saying, I-Corps is very much like IPSC.
Yeah.
Like IPSC with a revolver.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So when it comes to your holster must cover your trigger guard area and attached to your gun belt. I've never seen a holster that's not attached to your gun belt. It seems like a
really thigh rig?
Drop leg or thigh leg?
Drop leg, yeah.
Technically, it's still attached to your belt. Or cross
chest.
Yeah, it's attached to your calf, though.
Pardon me?
It's attached to two places.
Yeah, okay. And then, yep, you can use pretty much any kind of belt you want. So you can pretty much, in any division, you can use any kind of holster. One thing I thought that was interesting is they actually have a test for whether your holster holds onto your gun strong enough. And so when your gun belt, holster, and your gun belt, holster, and gun are all, like, attached to you, you must be able to hold the gun when the tester hops. So if they want to do a test, they would get you to pretty much have your gun and, like, how you would start. You have to jump, and it says your feet must leave the ground by a minimum of 3 inches. and you're not allowed to touch or hold the gun. And if you land and your gun stays in your holster, then it passes the test. Which sounds kind of weird, but I mean, it's better than IDPA. IDPA just said with sufficient amount of tension. Well, who defines what is sufficient, right?
I've seen people running and their gun starts to pop out, so.
So, yeah.
Is he shooting IDPA?
No, but it fell out during a 3-gun match.
Oops.
Yep, so you're allowed to use whatever kind of belt you want. So you're allowed to use an inside-outside belt. Another interesting thing is that they don't have a maximum round count for a stage. So I asked the local match director, and he said that if you have 5 speed loaders, you should never, like, you should have enough. Carry extra for extra reloads, but you shouldn't need more than 5. And even today, we had one big, like, 30-round stage, and I think even it technically would have been 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been 5 speed loaders.
Yep.
So the different divisions that there are, there's open, limited, limited 6, and in classic. So open division, you're in open if you have a compensating venting or metering ports of any kind. So if you have a comp on your revolver, or if you have an optical sight, so a red dot essentially. So if you have either of those two, then you're automatically in the open division. If you're in limited, pretty much means that you don't have. Pretty much you have any gun, but it doesn't have a compensator or a red dot on it. Pretty straightforward. And then a limited 6 is, once again, no compensator, no red dot, and you're limited to only 6 cylinders. So any 6-shot revolver using moon clips. And then classic division, no red dot, no compensator, 6-cylinder. Your barrel has to be a factory barrel. No added, like, you're not allowed to add any weight to your revolver. And you have to use speed loaders. Moon clips are prohibited. So pretty much if you have like your, you know, you went out and you picked up a revolver and you have a few speed loaders, you could pretty much come and run in classic division. You wouldn't need to go any fancier than that.
Are you still allowed to chamfer the cylinder face?
You're allowed to do any other modification to the gun.
Okay, so you can do the trigger and you can do, okay, the cylinders. Okay.
Yeah, I shoot classic with my Ruger GP100, and I've done extensive work to that trigger. So.
Yes, I know. I hear it's a good trigger.
Yeah, actually, I got complimented on it again. When I was at the match, I don't know what he had, the area coordinator, we'll call him.
Yeah, he seems to do a lot of the work for the membership, signing people up, helping them kind of navigate the I-Corps registration stuff.
Yeah, he's kind of the Canadian administrative guy. And he came up and he was talking to me because I shoot a Ruger. And he was talking about trying to get Ruger to sponsor more matches and, you know, produce essentially a line of revolvers for I-Corps.
Yeah, a more competitive gun.
Yeah, a more competitive gun. So he was asking me a lot of questions about it. And I guess he got to go down to Florida, I'm going to guess, where he got to handle a whole pile of different revolvers, but revolvers by Ruger. There we go. And he had said that even their Matt Champion wasn't as good of a trigger as what I've had done to mine, so.
Oh, no, the Matt Champion is nowhere near as nice as a Smith & Wesson. It didn't impress me at all.
Yeah, it's very much a stock revolver still. That's what I've kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted a Matt Champion. I wasn't willing to pay the extra amount of money for the features that it came with.
Well, a lot of people don't like the Rugers for the simple fact that it does take a lot of work to tune them. It really does. It can be difficult.
Well, I think part of that difficulty is because there's just so little aftermarket support. You can't get any replacement hammers. You can't get replacement triggers. You know, there are grips out there, but they're not nearly as many that Smith & Wesson had out. Whereas if you go on websites, like you go on to Brownells and search parts for like a 686,
you can find everything.
Yeah,
everything for it.
You can almost build a whole nother gun. They sell everything for it. But Ruger, they really, like, nothing. There's virtually no aftermarket support for a Ruger unless you want new grips or new sights. And that's pretty much it.
Hmm.
So we had to talk about that, and he was asking, you know, what would I request out of Ruger to either make a more competition gun, and things like, you know, what are some things that they could improve on? Yeah, that was one of the big things I mentioned, was having more aftermarket options, mm-hmm. right? Like maybe making, you know, releasing a hammer that had no spur on it.
Who made the shims for your hammer?
I can't remember. They're not Ruger. They're the same shims. If you go on, now you're going to get me all off track. They make shims for like every gun out there. You can get shims for like your 1911, your AR-15, your 1022, like everything. Pretty much any time that there's like a retaining pin in there kind of thing, they make shims for it.
And it really made a big difference for you, didn't it?
Oh yeah, it did. Like, well, you can see on my hammer where it used to rub against the frame.
Mm-hmm.
So just that extra little bit of friction was the difference between being able to use the lightest spring and set off the Federal primers reliably and not being able to do that. So just little things like that. And then the insides of them aren't exactly smoothed out, but like you said, that's kind of, I guess that's what you get for a not a custom build gun.
And the lower units, it's a cast unit. It's not CNC machined.
Yeah. I've heard flip-flop things on that, whether that's a better thing or whether that's like whether it actually makes the gun more indestructible or not. But
some people don't like it. Some people do like it if it's done properly. As far as I understand, there's no real difference.
Yeah.
And Ruger's been doing it for a very long time. I've never heard of a Ruger failing because of the metallurgy.
Yeah. No, neither have I. Actually, I've heard more people say that the Ruger metallurgy is better than a Smith & Wesson. And I've never seen it, but I've heard of people who say that when they looked up reloading stuff for, I don't know, I guess like a 357 Magnum, there'll be a maximum and then there'll be a Ruger maximum.
Yeah, they're a little bit stout. And the problem is people tend to overstress them. Because they tend to be, they're a little bit over-engineered and people like to get a little experimental in their reloads and blow up their guns. You know, they're meant for the caliber that they're designed for. So even if they really are beefier, I wouldn't really suggest going beyond the recommended chamberings in your manual or what it says in the manual.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or even better, what it says right on the gun.
Yeah, because usually it's a cylinder that's going to give way. So
lots of times whenever you see a gun that's a revolver that's exploded, it's the cylinder that blows out because that's where the pressure really is, right? If something gets clogged in the barrel, it's going to come back to the cylinder.
Yeah, usually.
Usually, unless you're like me and you put a squib and then a live round in behind it. But my Ruger survived.
It happens.
Yeah.
Well, didn't you guys see that video? Was it the, I want to say Smith & Wesson 500?
Yeah, to me that video looks faked. Do you see the way the barrel just... Yeah, it looks
a little staged.
Yeah, it's... I didn't see any huge, like a 500, it's going to be a fireball coming out of that thing.
Yeah.
Like if that top blows, it's going to be a lot of energy coming out of the top. That's a big projectile. And it looks faked. It looks like the barrel's actually wobbling when he comes up to the table. It looks like it's not even properly attached. Because they're pinned in there with a lot of... Well, they're not pinned. They're press fit these days. But it's an incredible amount of power that those two parts are together. I'm not sure if the 500's pinned or not. I think it should be.
Yeah. But yeah, so this is a very freestyle shooting style. Or shooting game. Yeah. So it's very much you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, like there's no concealment. So... From going from IDPA to this, like, you're allowed to air gun in IP or I-Corps.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to in IDPA. Like, people yell at you if you even, like, look like you're using your eyes to plan a route or something. So they explain the course of fire, and then everyone kind of is walking up, and everyone's just, like, running around and pointing and trying this and that. And I was just standing there. Mike's like, you know, you can move around the stage a little bit. And I was like, no, I don't want to get in trouble. And not having to wear concealment, well, today was a blessing because it was very hot.
Yeah, I'd say by the last two stages, I was done. Yeah, like, I was pretty much just shooting fast to go home.
So it definitely seems like a lot more like a game. It seems weird calling it that, but it's definitely more of a game than IDPA. I enjoy shooting IDPA, but it's very, like, serious in its rules.
Yeah. Whereas
I-Corps is very... very much like, we're just here to have fun and put some rounds down range and just, you know, have a good time. So you know, if you want to air gun, you don't have to wear a vest.
Yeah. Yeah, so
carry as much ammo as you want. We don't care.
Yeah, so they have ground faults. So pretty much they
fault lines.
Yeah,
yes.
Fault lines. So pretty much, you know, stay in this area or stay inside this.
Yeah, they don't let you just run around.
Well, yeah.
Like, no rules. Like, they do have a designated course they set out and, you know, start in this box, you know, and then you move to a different box and move up here and here's the fault line and that, you know, that kind of thing. But just the atmosphere also felt a lot. Maybe it was just the people we were shooting with was very relaxed. We're just, let's see what we can do here. And
yeah, it was a very good group of people that we shot with.
And it took, I don't think I got used to the air gunning. I don't think I once, like, pretended to be shooting. I just kind of stood there and, like, waved my hands back and forth a little bit.
All the IPSC guys do it. They guys just go to the side and they'll just do it physically, or they'll do it in their heads and just moving with their eyes closed. And yeah, everybody does it.
Yeah.
And I think
I have an I-Corps question. So are all your shots double action?
It can be however you want them to be. It's up to you. So if you want, you can thumb it and cock it back and do single action every shot, but that would just kill your time.
I think I tried to do that at one point. I was just, you know, back to my cowboy revolvers. I think I could see my thumb creeping up to cock it after a shot. It's like, no, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were no no-shoots today, were there?
No. No, because I was just to kind of... I've only seen Mike shoot I-Corps a couple... Really once, because you got into it after Lilo arrives. Usually I'm trying to wrangle her. I'm not there. So I kind of did a little quick study and to see what kind of the targets would look like and that kind of thing. And yeah, you said there'd be an X through them.
If there are no-shoots.
Instead of the hands, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
But there wasn't any no-shoots. There was specific order. Like on that one stage where you had to shoot all the reds first and then all the blues first, but no-shoots.
Yeah.
Now, did you use Mike's Ruger?
Yes. Yeah, we shared speed loaders and we shared gear.
Yeah. So what we did is I have my race holster set up. So I had my own belt and then Sarah had her own belt and I put a drop offset on my IDPA holster.
Yeah.
And you use that one.
Yeah, I didn't feel comfortable using your race holster. I've never really even shot your revolver because you bought it last year when I wasn't shooting. And I haven't been able, like, if we go shooting, I'm trying to practice with my own guns to get myself back up to snuff. So I hadn't ever really even shot your gun before today, like more than maybe a cylinder.
Really? So,
yeah.
That's not fair, Mike. You should have her out of the range.
I just want to shoot my own things instead.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's not because I won't let her.
I'm buying too many new guns, so I'm trying to get used to them.
Constantly just cycling through them. You don't have time for mine.
Oh, the problems that we wish we all had, eh?
Yeah.
I just don't know what guns to get used to.
Yeah, so, but because of that, like, and I've definitely never used a race holster before. So when I tried drawing from it, like just dry fire, and I didn't feel comfortable with it. I couldn't get it to work the way I wanted it to in my head. I just didn't feel comfortable. So I asked, like, could I just use the regular holster instead? Just, I'm already going to be thinking about so many other things at my first I-Corps match. And with a pretty much new to me gun, I'd rather not have to worry about accidentally dropping the gun out of this weird holster.
Yeah.
So what holster did you use?
Just like standard one.
It had a Blade Tech with a drop offset on it.
Like fully enclosed.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, so you mentioned the target. So targets in IDPA are NRA D1, I think. And they look like tombstones. That's what they always refer to them as. It's like a half circle at the top and a squared off at the bottom. And then in the middle, anywhere else on the paper is Charlie, then the next there's a circle. And inside there's Bravo. Inside that is Alpha. And there's actually an X zone. They didn't use it at all this match.
No.
But the X zone is, depending on the state, they'll actually designate that as a bonus spot. So if you hit that, then they'll actually take time off your score.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah. I've seen you shoot a stage, I think, with that. So it's, you know. It's,
yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's nice to get some bonus points. That's not something I usually... encounter, so it's interesting to see when you get bonus.
Yeah.
But there's none today.
Yeah, so an Alpha adds 0 seconds onto your score, a Bravo adds 1, a Charlie adds 2 seconds, and then a Miss is 5 seconds.
So accuracy counts.
Accuracy does count. At least get them on the paper, really.
Yeah.
That's most of the base, most other rules, if you go to a match, are pretty, straightforward. You know, don't shoot the no shoots. Stay within the box or whatever, the foot fault lines.
Now, is I-Corps a part of IDPA? Is it a separate membership that you have to join?
It is completely separate and its own entity.
Okay, so you have to be a member of I-Corps in order to shoot it?
No, you don't. So, I-Corps Canada, I'll put a link into the show notes for I-Corps Canada, and you'll see if you go under calendar and you can see upcoming events. And most of the events, if you look at them, they'll say I-Corps member, like today, I-Corps member was $15, non-I-Corps member, $18. So you never even have to join up with I-Corps unless you want to go shoot a regional match, like a larger match.
Now, do they want you to have any type of holster certification before you can participate in one of the matches? Or
Not like Black Badge. It's kind of more up to the individual range. So the very
Man, you guys shoot all the good sports.
I feel like they just keep letting me show up and shoot.
Yeah.
And no one's ever been like, hey, have you ever passed a holster course or anything?
Yeah,
like,
you kind of slipped in.
I just kind of keep showing up and no one said anything yet.
Yeah,
it's that smile. You just look at them and smile. It's, she's good.
They're just like, come on and shoot. I'm like, well, I've never even held this gun before. Like, that's fine. We'll figure it out. I'm like, okay.
But I mean, I know my very first match I went to, I talked to the match director and I told him that I shot IDPA. And he's like, okay, so you should be good with a holster. But I did see him working with someone. I have no idea who it was, but this was before you.
Oh, I didn't see that today.
And it was my very first one. And he went into it's just the indoor range because it was right there where they're doing the sign-in. And he actually got the person to draw. And I didn't see everything what he got him to do. But he just kind of, it was more just for him to be comfortable with the guy shooting that day. Less of a Black Badge type course.
Yeah, there didn't seem to be any. But then everyone who was there, I recognized from a previous match, so.
Yeah, it tends to be a lot of the same people. Like, I mean, any real shooting event, right? If you go to enough of them, then you start to recognize people.
Yeah.
I mean, most of these people are normally in cowboy costumes, but.
I saw someone there, and I saw he had a SAS sticker, and I've seen that Ammo Canada match before. Couldn't tell you what his name is. Couldn't give you,
Do you know what his handle is, though?
No, I couldn't picture him. I was trying so hard, and I never got the chance to ask him.
Yeah. So I-Corps is pretty open for what you want to do for your actual gun. So there is a rimfire category, I guess you could call it. And it says right here, either you can run a rimfire match as, a rimfire-only match, or you can run it, if someone wants to run a rimfire in a match.
That would be fun. Rimfire revolver?
Yeah. So pretty much the way that they set it up is...
You won't be using a speed loader.
Well, No, you don't need to. There's no speed loader, no holster. It's almost like... I would almost describe it as a good... I'll call it a junior. If you want to get someone who is young, who, maybe you or they weren't comfortable with a holster and having to do speed, reload a gun on the fly, things like that. That's kind of what the match is set up to be like. It's meant for specifically for them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would say, just from shooting one match, that it's
now very, you're a professional.
Now I'm professional. It's very similar to really all the other. Well, I haven't tried IPSC yet, but other shooting sports,
Yeah, it just
You have the course of fire. It's generally a certain order you engage the targets. You're drawing from the holster and and it's time. You got the beep, you start.
Yeah.
And you go. And so there are some differences, in your preparation.
Yeah. And there was a couple times when based on the setup, people were talking after you saw it and I'm going to start here and run over here. And I can do that and I don't have to run as far or whatever, right? So people are talking, they're friendly about it, and they'll share their strategy with you.
Yeah, really the only thing about I-Corps that, and I guess from doing previous shooting competitions, like, this was probably the one that I went into with the least amount of practice. Like, when I first shot a cowboy match, we practiced for months.
Yeah.
At the range, like, drawing from the holster, picking up from the table, transitioning, that kind of thing. And then when I shot my first IDPA match, you and I practiced, you know, dry firing and stuff every night at home for 2 weeks before the match. We had a, you know, little training schedule thing set up.
Yeah.
And this one, just from other circumstances, we weren't able to do as much practice and, like, no live fire practice, so.
And how did you do?
Okay.
Yeah. Scores haven't come out yet, but I thought you did really good.
Yeah, the thing that I was, I guess, because I had had this prior experience, I knew I'd feel comfortable, you know, engaging a course and making a plan. It was the reloads. That's the biggest, that's the thing to me about I-Corps that makes me.
And that's more about revolver.
Nervous isn't the right word, yeah.
Yeah, just, it's different.
It gave me the most stress, though, going and just doing the reloads, because I've seen people running around their speed loaders explode as they're trying to put it in, and they rounds everywhere, and they got to do another one. And
yeah,
that was probably the thing that makes I-Corps different than IPSC and IDPA and everything like that.
Yeah, like how many times did I go to match it in IDPA with my revolver, and yeah, people always come up and, oh yeah, you know, I got a revolver back at home. I, you know, I love shooting it, but you know, no one wants to be the only revolver shooter at a IPSC or an IDPA match. And after a year of doing it, I agree. Like, it's fun. I love shooting my revolver, but it gets kind of like, I don't know, boring's not the right word, but it gets kind of frustrating when you're always shooting a revolver and you're always the only person and you can never really compare yourself to other people.
I went to, I think, 6 IPSC matches with my revolver, and only once was another revolver shooter.
Yeah. But in IDPA, with the exception of shooting in Saskatchewan with Wes, state championship down south,
in Florida.
Yeah. Those are the only two times that I've ever shot IDPA with another revolver shooter. So that goes to show you, and I shot revolver for like a whole year.
So it's nice to have a section of the sport that's just revolver.
Strictly for revolvers.
Yeah. So if you really love revolvers, like you do, you love your revolver and you put so much work into it, that it's nice to have a sport that you can go to, like one of the games.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's an equal, like you can judge yourself, you can compete, you can chat, like, you know, everyone there likes their revolver. So when you're talking about it, it's everyone's getting it. And
yeah, and even when you talk to other shooters there, a lot of them also shoot other games like IPSC.
A lot of them shoot IPSC,
but most of them don't even shoot their revolver in IPSC. Nope. They'll shoot like a semi. So, yeah, it's really nice to have a good place to go to where you can, where everyone knows your name.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was good. And like I said, it's if you like IDPA, if you like IPSC, you'll probably like I-Corps. Like, it's very similar. Like I said, it was just the reloads and expecting there to be a 7th shot, like my first stage, I shot my 6 rounds and then I tried to pull the trigger again and nothing happened. And it took me a second to realize that there wasn't going to be any more booms. Like, I had to do a reload.
Yeah. So what did you like about I-Corps?
Like I said to you, kind of like after, like, it's good. It's very much like shooting IDPA or going up and shooting cowboy in a sense. Like, I like, you know, the planning I have to do, like I have to engage them in a certain pattern. I like kind of moving. I love moving while I'm shooting, like running, like there wasn't a maze, but that's okay.
No.
is there barrel length restrictions?
No, there's no barrel length restrictions. Like I said, I pretty much read off the rules for equipment. There's no weight, there's no barrels, there's like, it is a pretty free flowing game. Yeah. Like, if you have a 6-shot revolver, you're going to fit into 1 of 2 classes, right? If you want to throw a red dot on it, sure, you're going into open, but then doesn't really matter. Like, that's okay.
Yeah, I like that I didn't have to worry about cover or reloading behind a barricade or, you know.
Yeah, that's an
that IDPA kind of. Yeah, but that's what I shoot IDPA. Yeah. Cowboy doesn't have any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So compared to IDPA, I liked the freedom. Is that the right?
Yeah. Yeah. The free flow of it.
Yeah, it was, I felt much more relaxed because it was like, I'm just going to dump this. I shot one round. I'm going to dump this, this whole cylinder on the ground and reload because it works better at the next box. And I don't have to worry about getting penalized for leaving ammo on the ground. Like,
yeah, there's more action. You're running and gunning. You're not having to worry about covering yourself and everything. You're just moving as fast as you can.
Didn't have to think so much about.
Yeah.
Where I was going to do this or where I was going to do that and where I would run out of rounds. It was just shoot till it doesn't go.
A lot of it also wasn't so much that. To me, it's more of you don't have to do it in a certain order. So, I mean, you can screw up your order and, yeah, it might take you time that you have to run back and get a target you missed. But, I mean, you have that option. You're not going to get penalized for it. Where an IDPA, if you pretty much don't do it in a certain order, you're pretty much going to get penalized for it.
And I could see how you can make a very specific game plan. Like, I'm going to do these shots from this barricade or, you know, this box, and then I'm going to move here and this and that. And, like, people take it very seriously. So, that's good, too. Like, it was nice that everyone there was competitive still because, you know, we do these things because we like to compete.
Yeah, because we want to win.
So, it was nice that I didn't have to, you know, I could throw ammo on the ground, but
yeah,
you know, it was just as competitive as IDPA, which I really liked. I really liked the competitiveness. You wouldn't know it based on my scores, but I do.
When's the next match?
I don't know.
the match in Smith Falls in a few weeks. Yeah,
I'm not sure. It's harder to both do that. So I don't think I'll become like a regular I-Corps shooter, but when I can get to a match, I'll definitely be more than willing to share a gun with you.
So it was a good experience. You'd come back.
Yeah, oh, definitely. It was a lot of fun. I after my first stage, I was like, oh yeah, this like super fun, just like IDPA. Really enjoyed it. Can't wait to keep going.
So that was your overflowingly great review about it.
Yeah, two thumbs up.
What didn't you like about I-Corps?
I was not good at hitting the steel today, so I hope there's not a lot of steel.
I have a feeling that's less about I-Corps and more about your skills.
That was my skills. Nothing really. No, like, I honestly can't think of anything I didn't really like. It was so hot.
Turn the temperature down a little bit.
Yeah, that's really it. No, it was easy to follow the courses of fire. Like, they weren't trying to mess, like, they weren't out there trying to make you mess up or anything.
I did that enough on my own.
You know, everyone who we shot with was super friendly.
Yeah, even like, you can tell, like any match you go to, right? There's always some people who are, I'd say, more competitive or at least more, you know, in their head, they have to win this game. Otherwise, you know, they don't deserve to go home. And even those people are still nice.
Yeah, and people were like, you know, like, oh, here's a trick you can try.
Yeah.
You know, it's your first match. Next time, if you do another one, like, but not in a condescending way. So everyone was really helpful, which I like. You know, there's no one like, oh, I saw you did this. And, you know, like, tries to pat you on the shoulder. And
no one gave you the little lady talk?
Yeah, but just in general. Like, I've heard people give it, you know, I've heard guys give it to other guys at the range, too. Like, everyone was super like, I saw this, and I thought maybe this might, if you did it this way, it might be better. Like, no one was condescending, which was nice.
Yeah.
I can't really think of anything I didn't enjoy today.
That's good.
I really liked it. Now, I like shooting revolvers too, so.
Yeah?
Yep.
Oh yeah, I guess you've always shot revolvers.
Yeah.
That was your original your original game.
So I had a good time.
Yeah. Any other questions about I-Corps?
What are the common calibers? I don't know if there's someone asked that.
The most common calibers are, I'd say, 38 special if you're gonna do classic division, just because they work well in speed loaders. Outside of that, I guess the next three most popular would be like 9, 40, and 45. And that's just because I think if you shoot IPSC, I think most people want to shoot a minimum of 40. I think a few people have 45. And then if you go with the Jerry Michalik super competition, what is it, the 9.29, I think it is. And that's an 8-shot 9mm revolver. And that's geared towards the open class shooter. So those would be, I'd say, the main ones. One guy was shooting a 45 Colt today, which, like, George would have loved him. It's like a little cannon going off, and you put these gigantum holes in every target.
Did he have the plaid shirt on?
Yes.
He's a cowboy shooter. Yes, he was the one.
The one.
The one with the sticker.
So I was going to say, the only wheel gun I have access to right now is a 41 Magnum, I think.
That is legal in IDP or in I-Corps. So.
Right, just finding components to reload.
Well, no, I'm just sitting here. I'm sitting just here to brag, here. You have the dies, don't you?
I have the dies. I have like maybe 100 projectiles. Yeah. It's just projectiles I can't find. Like, I found on one place, and that's it.
Yeah, well, now we have a second belt set up for my Ruger. So if you ever want to come out to a match...
They're on Sundays.
We have a second... Yeah, they're on Sundays, which is geared towards you, Benny.
Yeah. I should come all the way out to Ottawa, then.
Today's match was in Kingston, so...
And okay. You shot one
so it's only a three-hour drive, Benny.
Yeah, I shot one at Lower Trent Valley.
So that's what, near Trenton, Belleville area?
Yeah, that's a little bit closer.
Yeah.
Regionals was in Peterborough, even closer. And there is an I-Corps group, Sharon Gun Club, I think it is.
Yep.
That's near Toronto, right?
Yeah, that's just north of you, Benny.
North.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's all Toronto.
No, doesn't matter.
is it like south of Peterborough? It's Toronto.
Oh my gosh.
And this is coming from someone who grew up there.
I know. You live south of Peterborough.
I used to. I don't anymore.
I know. Now we're in.
I don't have any revolvers. Any revolvers left. None. I sold my last one to John a couple years ago at the charity shoot.
Ah. Well, you should have kept it. We could have won out and shot an I-Corps match.
You know, I've always wanted a Ruger GP100. I've never had one.
Well,
I've had quite a few Smiths, but I've never had a Ruger.
Yeah. The GP100 you can pick up on, like, CGN. I'd say pretty good price. Like, I'd guess sub $700, probably.
So yeah, blue one, $700.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get a Smith & Wesson, then you can, but you're probably going to pay at least $200 more.
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
A 686 is over grand these days, $950.
Oh, yeah, brand new one, yeah. But yeah, it's a fun game. And if you're a wheel gun shooter, you like shooting it, and you don't have to be super competitive to come out and play.
I don't like speed loaders. I like moon clips.
That's fine. There's
a lot easier.
There's only one division for speed loaders, but there's three for moon clips. So think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like I said,
they don't explode on you.
Mine don't explode anymore. Ever since I found out which one was the bad, I had one bad speed loader that wouldn't hold the rounds. Once I took that one out of the rotation, now they all hold fine.
I didn't have one explode onto me. I was so surprised that I made it through the day without, like,
yeah,
you know, rounds going everywhere.
I haven't had that happen since, I think, Florida. I think that was the last time I've had that happen. So, and I've been shooting I-Corps and IDPA with my revolver, so.
I've never had it happen. I've never used speed loaders. I've always used moon clips.
Well, it works, right? And you know what? If you have the gear and the setup for it, I think it's nice. Like, I kind of... The big reason why I haven't moved to a gun with moon clips is because an IDPA, your revolver barrel length has to be shorter than 4 1/4. And there's only one, I think the Ruger Redhawk, which just came out, that is a moon clip gun that's 4 1/4 or 4.2. Because I'd like, if I bought a gun to shoot IDPA, I'd want to be able to take it down to the States and shoot it too.
Well, the Redhawk's a 44.
It's Redhawk or one of those. It's a 45 long Colt, but you can put...
Okay, well, I guess you can get chambered and other things.
Yeah. And it comes with 45 ACP and moon clips for it, so...
Oh, I know the one you're talking about. Yeah, they're interchangeable.
Yeah. So, yep. Any other questions about I-Corps before we move on?
Nope, that's about it.
I'm good.
Okay. All right, Thomas, why don't you take event number one?
Event one is Women of the Outdoors Range Day on Sunday, October 1st. And it features pistol shooting, rifle marksmanship, trap shooting, and archery. It's hosted by Amanda Lynn Mayhew on behalf of the Civil Gun Club. Registration is $60. Starts at 8 a.m. and the links are in the show notes for the registration.
Okay, Sarah, you want to take event number two?
Sure. It's the CCFR Ladies Goose Hunt Contest. So the draw date is October 1st, and the prize is a guided goose hunt. Birds will be called in Not guaranteed, but likely. It's hosted by Kelly Kincaid and Robert Foote. And the requirements are that you must have a CCFR membership, a PAL, license to hunt, migratory birds, own a gun and ammo, and must be willing to travel to the Kingston area. The exact location will be determined once the area has been scouted. And please dress for the weather. If you're not a CCFR member, you can purchase a membership and get two chances to enter, which is nice. And to enter, just send an email to info@firearmsrights.ca with Ladies Goose Hunt in the subject line. And once, yeah, the draw date is October 1st, so make sure you have a few more days, get your entries in to win this hunt.
Mike, there's nothing in the must-haves that says you have to be a woman.
It's called Ladies Goose Hunt Contest.
Hey.
You still can't go, baby.
Didn't really say it, but I feel like it's implied.
Kelly's going, so that's a lady. And then, you know...
Ben, you remember having last week and you started this conversation with George and it got into transgender and it didn't end well?
I wasn't going down that route. I gotta have multiple plans for attack.
But I feel like maybe just...
No, I'm good.
Put on by the ladies division.
Where's the quality? Hello? Where's the men hunting? I'm kidding, guys. I don't care.
I'm not gonna write them a letter and ask them to post a contest. I'm sure they will. Or they'll just tell you to go find some woods or something.
Go find some wood.
Go find some woods.
There's some trees. Let's go.
Get your license. Go.
I'll take event number three. The second annual Heck Cancer Charity Shoot on October 21st at Guelph Rod and Gun Club. The proceeds from this year's event will be donated directly to Mr. Scott H., who has stage 3 medullary thyroid cancer. Your support is greatly appreciated and will make a dramatic impact to the lives of Scott and his family. This is being sponsored by Ragnarok Tactical, Grey Fox Strategic, Titan Tactical, TDSA, Land Shooting Supplies, Firearms Outlet of Canada, Fresh Collective. Links in the show notes.
All right, so listener email. So we got a couple emails this week. First email. So this is from listening to episode 144. Have one better than 6 rounds at the range. So we're talking about the good, bad, the ugly. I'm a member at a range, and you can only have 6 rounds, no holster, and the range is only open Sunday from 2 to 4. Really?
Oh my god.
What's the point of the range if you're only open for 2 hours a week?
That sounds horrible. Like,
really, what is the point of it?
It must be an old revolver club if it's only 6 rounds.
6 rounds, no holster, so yeah. Couldn't even be PPC, because doesn't PPC use the holster?
Maybe like Bullseye?
Yeah.
Like Bullseye, yeah. So what, they're open for 2 hours when they do their weekly match and that's it? They're closed after that?
Sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Well, it depends, because I know some of the ranges are actually sharing, like the one in Dawes and Danforth. I think there's actually 3 clubs in there sharing it. But 2 hours, come on, that's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway,
continue.
Okay.
Now, I was going to say, he's in New Brunswick, so at least he's not paying Ontario range membership prices for those 2 hours.
Yeah. So I'm also a member at 4 different ranges here in New Brunswick, and they have issues. No steel at one. The others don't care. Why? Because we don't have enough training. Biggest problem with firearms owners. Waiting for permission is not the answer either. We as firearms owners need to take the initiative and get more training and qualifications, like the black badge. It's a good start. Actually, maybe something a little easier than the black badge, just for the movements. Or just the movements?
I think it's supposed to say just for the moment.
Just for the moment. That would make so much more sense.
It's okay. He's probably using voice to text or something.
So he listened to the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good, shooting IPSC here in New Brunswick in Nova Scotia. Based on Slamfire Radio, sounds like it's awesome out there. The bad, the old guard that want to keep things the way it was, and range members that don't like action shooting with zero tolerance move on folks.
True.
Yeah. And the ugly, I became a member at a range, only open 2 to 4 on Sundays, and the owner asked a guy to watch me. He goes to the line, finger on the trigger, shoots right through the table. says, oops. This is the guy that's supposed to watch the range. Two shots later, another into the ground, maybe 3 feet from the desk. I ask myself, what did I just sign up for? Oh my God.
Oh God.
Yeah. That is, oh boy. Maybe that's why they're only open for 2 hours a week.
I suggest not renewing that membership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I only go to sight in rifles with both eyes open. So he wrote here, P.S. I was the RO for Trevor Furlott at the last three-gun match, and when he was running and his gun fell from his holster, see, we talked about this earlier. Oh, yeah. It was not the holster's fault. He was swinging those female hips that he had, and it just flew out. I would to thank Trevor for the second place in my division, which he handed to me with his DKO. So this email started with this question. Question, what kind of steel do you shoot? What grade, AR, and is the steel shrouded? Trevor, I'm not saying I hate you, but if you were hit by a bus, I would be driving the bus. I really enjoy your podcast. I was turned on to you folks by Slamfire. Thanks, James.
Wow. Thank you, James.
Thank you.
To point out,
that's an awesome email.
I do not have guns flying out when I'm running.
They stay where they started.
They stay where they started, so.
You're one up.
Yeah. Well, to answer his questions, I find most popular is the AR-500 steel these days. You find it in a lot of local stores.
Yeah, it's getting really popular. And
is that what our range is trying to convert to?
Yes, our range is in the process of converting to AR-500 steel.
And here our steel is shrouded, James.
Yeah,
it has to be.
It's just for one no of reason the, whatsoever. The terrible rules and unterrible that it has to be shrouded. There's no real guidelines on what the shrouding is. So I've seen everything from thin pieces of wood to polymer.
Steel at the club. Well, it's permanently in there, but it's like built into the berm. They use like tire tracks, and they built like a little house into it.
Yeah, like a little shed for it, cover.
Yeah.
So at my range, they do the same thing for the stent, for like the regular steel, like at the regular range. But when they have on the action ranges for like IPSC and whatever, then they'll put I want to say plywood, thin things of plywood.
Yeah.
It's really like what are you worried about splashing going to the sides? Because no one should be standing next to your target, so.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
No.
Splinters, that's what you're worried about from all the wood shrapnel yeah. that's coming off. Yeah.
You have more chance of a projectile or a lead or a metal jacket coming back at you than ever getting hit by the splatter coming off the gong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's that. But for him, he's like right by X Metal Targets, and I'm pretty sure Trevor is a dealer, so speak to Trevor about getting steel, and he'll be more than happy to hook you up.
Yeah, because X-Metal does, they sell a bunch of different, like, they sell, like, what do you call that thing? A Texas Star. I know they sell the IDPA target with the hostage guy.
The plate racks.
Yeah.
Hold on. He just threw Trevor under the bus. Is it a good idea to go try to do business with Trevor now?
Trevor is if
prices any, might if be marked up a little bit. You anything about him?
He's a forgiving guy. James,
an extra 15%. There you go.
He's a forgiving guy. I'm sure he'll work out something.
Yeah. But yeah, for the most part, I think everything that I shoot, I don't know if any of it actually is AR-500 that I shoot at like my pistol matches. Because you don't need AR-500 to shoot, like if you're just going to shoot it with a pistol. Once you go into like the rifle territory, I think that's when you really need to upgrade to the AR-500.
Right, because it's not the size of the bullet, it's the speed at that point. Because it'll just punch a little hole. What are you laughing at, Mike? Did I say something silly?
Nope.
It's true. He's
I was
correct.
Just thinking something silly.
His mind was in the gutter again.
So, Thomas, do you want to take the next email?
Next one is from Wanda Scopes. Hey, guys. Thank you for having me on your show last week. I've listened to the show over again, and when we were talking about our first guns, Benny made a comment that was overlooked. Mike was commenting about George having to be responsible for buying me a new Ruger, and then I saw it is now responsible for buying me my first scope, so it has to be a good one. Benny then said, I have a scope that you should buy. so I was interested in his suggestion. He never got the opportunity to say. I think George got squirrely again, but what else is new? So she wants to know, what was Benny's suggestion for a scope?
So I was listening to Slamfire Radio a couple weeks ago, and I actually had it open in my my browser, and I've since lost it. I forget who they were interviewing, who was talking about it, but I think it was 6.4 Sierra Riflecraft, maybe? I don't know.
I think you're right. I think they did have them on the show recently.
Right. So, but make sure you put rifle in there, because otherwise you get some weird guy in California. if I remember correctly. So I tried to find the scope, and they only sell it from the States. They don't have anyone in Canada. And it took some digging on the website, and I sent a link to the...
I just sent it back to you. But it said, you're sorry, but the page cannot be found. So not a good link.
Right, so I found it again. But again, try and find it on their website. They're pretty much all the same price, whether it be if it's like the fixed magnification.
Okay, but Benny, you never told us the name of the scope.
It's the SWFASS scope. It's the Super Sniper, I believe, is what the SS stands for. And they're like $300 US, and you can get them in MOA or MILS. And it came with a glowing recommendation.
Okay, so there you go, Wanda. Thomas, what would you suggest?
There's a few. I would like something new, like Benny's going through. 22 Plinkster really likes the Hawk scopes, so I went and checked them out, and I bought a Hawk airgun scope. And believe it or not, I'm running it on a 44 Magnum, and the scope's holding together, so it shows how well they're made. On your budget, I do like the Nikon.
Well, remember, she has an unlimited budget because George is paying for it.
Well, there was one Benny was looking at, too. There's a Bushnell that has an adjustable objective that I liked. It's a lower magnification, a 3-7. Vortex, it's unlimited.
Well, I think the budget's unlimited because George is paying for it, right?
Oh, look at some of the Leopolds. They're very nice.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, some of the top-line bursts are very good, too. Zeiss, Zeiss are really good, too, Wanda. Look at some Zeiss. Some of them are U.S.-made, not made in Germany these days, and they're fairly reasonable for $800, $900 plus.
So if you have any feedback, questions, or comments, you can send them to us at host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in the comment section of our website at newshootercanada.ca. So we have no new iTunes or Stitcher reviews. Facebook likes are at 1,168. So closing comments. I just wanted to make a comment. The next week I'm actually down in Pennsylvania for ICOR regional match. Convenient. We were just talking about ICOR. I mean, who would have thought that would have lined up so perfectly?
Mm-hmm. Good segue.
Yeah, I know. So I won't be on next week's show. But at the same time, Sarah and I are actually moving. Way back when, we talked about why we got into firearms, and I got into firearms because of being prepared. And that's kind of what got me originally in the direction, and then competition just kind of blew it out of proportion. But so we have been able to move to a much more...
spacious?
Sustainable place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we're actually moving, so hopefully we are going to get some good internet and be back soon. But it may be a while, so until
maybe a couple
then,
weeks.
Yeah, so until then, hold tight, we'll be back, hopefully. If not, it was great being on.
No.
So, yeah.
We'll make sure we get good internet so you can continue to regale your audience with your tales.
As the emails come in, don't worry about it.
As my eyes start
Mike,
rolling backwards in my head,
we can do without. all right, Thomas, do you have any shout outs?
This week, Mark Price. I've teased Mark over the years because he's cheap. He's so cheap, his butt cheeks squeak when he walks, kind of cheap. But it's not fair. Mark actually has, well, his kids are in, they're teenagers now, university for a couple of years. So they got two kids. Money's tight. Unlike myself or Trevor, who don't have kids and we have more of a disposable income, Mark doesn't. So, you got university and all that kind of stuff. So we're teasing him. And he went out and I guess he was out at a match and he asked Trevor's advice of what kind of shotgun. So Trevor gave him his advice. And of course, he never followed it. He went out and bought Canadian Tire had a Hatsun Escort 12 gauge pump on sale for $250 Canadian Tire. So he bought that.
Great deal.
It holds 7 in the tubes, 8 rounds. He said the action's like butter. He said he's got a nice trigger on it. And it's got ghost ring sights and a fiber optic front sight. Nice pistol grip. He's into it for under $275. You know, if that would have been, say, Benelli tactical pump, that would have been $750. So if he can get what he can get for $250 and still keep money left over for ammo, I didn't mean to tease you, Mark. Sometimes you have to, people don't have a lot of money. And if you want to get in the sport, don't let somebody talk you into buying some extravagant gun that you may not be able to afford. If you've got $250 and Canadian Tire has something that might suit your needs, go for it.
Yeah. And don't let people tell you that just because you don't have their favorite brand or their gun, their suggested gun, that you can't play either.
Like there's nothing wrong with some of these Turkish guns, especially some of the autos.
Yeah.
My buddy Bob's been shooting his Hatsun. He's got the Semi for 3 years now, and he's never had an issue with it. And I mentioned to Mark, I said, make sure you order an SNJ follower, because that's going to be a weak point in that thing. The Turkish guns have crappy followers. He says, I don't have to. It came with two extra followers. So perfect. So, as long as it's running and he can shoot it well, who cares?
Yeah. And that's a good point. We were talking about the Rugers and the Smith & Wesson to get into I-Corps. You don't even need to buy those. The Alpha Project, they make a budget revolver. And they actually make a 6-shot, 9mm revolver that someone in our squad would actually shoot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it the Alpha or the Charter?
I believe it's the Alpha.
It's American made, isn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah, one of them is American made. And it's actually, the problem with those guns sometimes is that the frame isn't meant for the cylinder. They'll take a 357 frame and then put that awkward looking little cylinder in and then set the barrel back.
Yeah.
The Alphas are actually made for the 9mm cartridge. So it doesn't look off balance. It looks like a balanced revolver because the cylinder and the front of the slide or front strap, they all fit.
Yeah. Well, this was an Alpha Project. And I mean, yes, it's not going to be a super sexy Smith & Wesson, but I mean, you can get into the game and play with it, right? Mm-hmm. So
there's $650, and you can get your holster and all your gear.
Yeah.
And you're in the game.
Yeah.
So don't let people tease you, Mark, if your gun only costs you $250. Because I distinctly remember somebody smoking Trevor's butt with his grandpower against Trevor's gun. So did you see that video a couple months ago? The steel shoot?
No.
Mark Price went up. And Mark's a novice shooter. He's just getting into action pistol. So they had a shooting tree set up. And Mark smoked for a lot on the steel with his grandpower.
Wow. Good for him.
It was nice to see.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had the rematch yet, but it was great to see that he did it.
Yeah. It's good. So, Benny, do you have a shout out?
Just to my wife for, the usual. Dealing with me and everything like that. Being awesome, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I haven't had a very eventful week or anything, so.
He's in holiday mode, too.
Yeah, but not like vacation holiday.
Well, it's because you had to hike everywhere.
Yeah, and then
I just got busy
time of year.
Yeah, Sarah, do you have any shoutouts?
My shoutout, I have a couple. First to Dylan from work. Thanks for coming to the range with us and being a good sport and not minding that Leela came with us too. He was good with her. And he did a really good job, so I'm excited to hopefully keep his enthusiasm up there for it. And my second shout out is to you, Mike. Thanks for taking me my first I-Corps match and sharing your gear with me and giving me good pep talks before each stage, so I knew I could do well.
Welcome. I hope you had a good day.
I did. Thank you.
Yeah. So George isn't here, but he chose to fill in his shout out and says, my shout out is to myself for being just that awesome. So I have to assume he's talking about me.
Or me.
Well, I read it, so myself. No, my shout out this week is to Sarah for coming out to the iCore match and having a good time and just general stress time of moving, being awesome. So
thanks.
Yeah. All right, so Thomas, you want to take us on out of here?
Okay, until next week, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes.
Doesn't matter what you shoot as long as you look good doing it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns.
I edit stuff out. Like this awkward silence.
I was just going to say, I was like,
I'll edit this
crickets,
out.
Crickets.
I was going to say, I was quite comfortable in that silence.
Probably should change it to, like, as long as you have fun doing it.
Nah, who cares?
No.
I got my first gun when I was 10. I didn't need a license.
I don't know if we were allowed to have guns.
I got a semi-auto when I was 13.
Was it the first semi-auto ever made?
It was a Winchester Cooey. Made in Cobourg, Ontario. They both were Winchester Cooeys.